So the next one is Socrates Leptos Bourgi from PricewaterhouseCoopers is going to talk to us how to prepare for an IPO. So that's, I think, a very timely topic.
Okay. So good afternoon, everybody. From me, Socrates Leptos from PwC. I'm Global Shipping and Ports Leader for PwC. And joining me today is Santos Equitz, who is with our U.S. Capital Markets Group. She's based in Greece, and we both work with shipping companies that are either already publicly listed or are in the process of becoming publicly listed. So we heard in the previous sessions about the interest of a lot of companies to enter the capital markets, particularly the U.S., and what I'm going to talk about today, what we're going to talk about today, is about some of the practical aspects as to what companies should be doing when they want to enter the capital markets in the U.S. So not a technical process-based presentation, but rather more about the practical aspects of it. So there we go. Just start to thinking, why do we focus so much on the preparation process? And why is preparation key to success? We all know that timing is everything when it comes to taking an opportunity, an opportune market, finding the right pricing, being able to execute an IPO in such a short period of time as, you know, a couple of months means that some groundwork needs to have taken place beforehand. When we talk about preparation, people should bear in mind that there's two aspects of it. One is the going public aspect of it, and the other one is the being a public company. So companies need to prepare for both. Going public is the process of going up to filing and actually executing the IPO. Being a public company means that day one, once you go public, you know, you immediately have to comply with all the regulations applicable to listed companies. And that cannot happen at the press of a button. Companies need to have prepared for that way beforehand. So when we're talking about a private company, sometimes a family-owned company that wants to IPO, we're talking about a huge transformation that needs to take place before it's able to meet all these requirements and cater to the demands of a highly regulated market under the SEC and PCAOB rules, but also to cater to the needs of investors and the analyst community. So this is why preparation is key. And the beginning of preparing is actually asking oneself whether an IPO is indeed the right way to go for the company. Is the company ready to go public? And that is relevant from different aspects. Is it operationally ready to go public? Does management have the right strategy? Is it committed to do this? Is it able to deliver what the market will demand? Is it ready to make the necessary changes to do so? There are a lot of costs involved in the process. Part of these costs are the actual IPO process, but companies will generally need to bring in additional resources in order to be able to meet the additional regulations. There's a lot of demand on management's time. So there are costs that are building up that will be of a recurring nature, and there are costs that will be involved in actually the going public process at the beginning. So the management really needs to make that assessment at the beginning before and they need to be fully committed to do so as they go ahead. We have seen before that companies have gone actually rather quickly, I would say, probably through the process of hiring SEC counsel, legal counsel, getting the auditors to audit financial statements in accordance to PCAOB standards, which is a requirement. But then, you know, as they're getting closer, you see that it's not necessarily just about the market not being there and, you know, oh, we lost the window. It's also about commitment. It's also realizing that maybe they weren't ready from the beginning. So I think common message to some of the previous speakers is that, indeed, companies that will have a better chance to succeed will start thinking about this early on. Just looking at some of the strategy decisions when it comes to shipping companies, companies need to consider, of course, in terms of strategy, which sector they're going to be in, what types of vessels they're going to have, what's their story. Is it going to be based on particular technical characteristics of their vessels, of their fleet? They need to consider what's going to happen with the cyclicality in the shipping sector. How do they respond to cyclicality in the shipping sector? Can they deliver this strategy consistently? We know that the markets look for companies and management that can deliver a consistent strategy that build credibility through delivering what they promise. So, and ultimately, how can the company differentiate from its peers? So these are really some of the key questions we see in the companies that we work with as being key at that preparatory stage. So assuming that this is the way to go, then some of the first steps companies need to make are to build the right team. It is very much the success of an IPO process is very much a team effort. So they need to start making sure that they build sufficient a management team with sufficient depth to carry out both to monitor existing operations, but also to focus on the IPO. And the IPO will likely have required different expertise than what the company has already had. And you need to bring that expertise in and probably need to ensure that the people, that the management that will present to the investors and that will run the roadshows understand that process very well. They need to be able to sell the company to the investors. Identifying independent board members early is important. Sometimes companies wait until very late to do so, but directors in a publicly listed company have a lot of responsibilities, and they need to familiarize themselves with the companies before they before it goes public, probably, just to make themselves comfortable that this is a company that where they can really work with, that they can really work with. Positive public image is extremely important. We see time and again that companies that really, the big success stories are really ones that we have been hearing about before they even went public. And that is rather important, of course. So building relationships with the right advisors is important early on. These are the people that will advise you. The investor, the investment bank panel earlier on, the investment bankers said that they're willing to offer advice free of charge at the beginning because they earn so many fees that are riding on the success of the IPO. So when it comes to the strategy part of it, they're important people to speak to. And then, of course, there's others that need to come into the equation, and they all need to work together seamlessly as a single team. So being open with those advisors is key to getting the process run such that issues will be flushed out early, such that they will be addressed early. So we're talking about company personnel, so making sure that you have enough depth and expertise within the organization. Let's say you may need to bring in a reporting person, whereby the company before may not have had a financial reporting function. You may bring in an internal auditor, where the company before may not have had the need to have one, and so on. Securities legal counsel are the ones that are responsible for the compliance aspects of the transaction and getting your filing documents ready. Investment bankers, of course, are the ones that will ultimately take you to market. Independent auditors fulfill the requirement of having audited financial statements under PCOB account, under PCOB auditing standards, and that is the requirement of the market. So they need to be PCOB registered, and they will also assist with all the aspects around financial reporting and accounting treatments and also preparations for responses to SEC comment letters that you will have on your filing. Then there's other advisors you can bring in, such as investor relations firm, an investor relations firm, such as Capital Link, for instance. or other accountants that can help keep a balance with your auditors, because your auditors may not always be able to assist if there are independence conflicts. So just a bit about structuring. So once you have your team together, talk about structure, how you go to market. Generally, this can be quite flexible. I mean, we've seen before companies create a holding company that will be the IPO company, and they can drop in vessels as and when they as required. However, that needs a bit of thinking, because that can also have an impact on what you report on historically. So where you have an existing fleet and you're carving out part of that fleet, you need to be very careful as to what you're carving out. Does the fleet you're carving out have particular characteristics that are different to the existing fleet? You need to consider whether you want to have the management company within the listed group or outside of the listed group. And there are different dynamics that come to play. But and at all times, this has to happen in a transparent way. There is a lot of scrutiny and transparency around the transactions of the entity going public. That is one of the concerns of the existing shareholders before they go public. So you want to make sure that this structuring takes place beforehand. You address these concerns in a transparent way. You build the relationships. You ring fence what's in there. And when I say ring fence the entity that will go public, I'm also referring to relation to transactions that relate to the existing fleet, and perhaps, for instance, you may have cross-collateralization or loans that are on a joint and several basis with other loans in the existing fleet, talking again about a carve-out situation. So these will need to be ring-fenced for when going public. Talking about management companies, just a statistic, out of 25 U.S.-listed shipping companies that are based in Greece, for instance, 16 have their management companies as related parties. That means that they are controlled probably by shareholders that also own a majority shareholding in the listed group. And 9 of them are subsidiaries of the listed group. And even in cases where a third-party manager is used, they tend to have a subsidiary that kind of manages that relationship, and that is purely from a controls perspective. And I think Santos will touch a bit on that a bit later when she covers a bit about related party transactions. I think I'm going to pass on to Santos now, who's going to cover a bit about accounting, financial reporting, and other aspects.
Okay, we're not going to go through all the details of U.S. GAAP, IFRS, or ultimately what needs to go into your financial statements, but one of the items that we wanted to talk about is the fact that most companies, most private shipping companies, do have a set of financial statements, either under U.S. GAAP or IFRS, that they currently use for private purposes and reporting to their banks, and that's fine, and it's audited typically under ISA standards. But as part of the process of going public, you're going to need to convert those private financial statements to public company financial statements. And many times when we go to meet with either existing or new clients, our clients say to us, hey, I have a set of financial statements. I'm ready to go to the market. And literally, it's night and day when you start with what your old financial statements look like to ultimately what your public company financial statements will look like. The majority of that comes through the disclosure process. So the SEC and the U.S. investors typically want to see very detailed disclosures about where management is making significant judgments and whether it's critical accounting policies. Typically for shipping companies, that's typically maybe the useful lives of the vessels, how you're accounting for dry docking and special survey, as well as your impairment tests. Impairment tests is where the most judgment occurs with management, really because each company is using their own inputs. Typically, there's consistency, but at the end of the day, management does have the ability to change some of those inputs when going through impairment tests. The SEC also has additional requirements that typically you will not see in private company financial statements. So if you operate in multiple segments or how management manages their company on a daily basis, that will need to be included in the financial statements. We also have earnings per share that will need to go in. Even prior to becoming a public company, you'll need to disclose earnings per share. And then sometimes if you have some business combination, there's additional pro forma disclosures. And there's a few other little items, but again, it's just some of these incremental disclosures and changes to the financial statements that will happen. Over and over, we talk about the SEC and their very thorough and rigid review process. They will ask you over and over to, you know, they'll come back and ask you again and again to please expand disclosures, please expand disclosures. And if you have any kind of one-off complex accounting issues that really, it's not consistent in the shipping industry, and usually we see this with debt and equity instruments, then the SEC is going to ask you which accounting you've applied, how you got to the conclusions, and so typically you're going to want some documentation in place prior to even submitting your financial statements to the SEC. We all know in a private world that how you work very closely with your auditors, and you rely on your auditors to help you with the accounting, especially if you don't have the expertise in-house. Well, as you become a public company, the SEC expects that management is going to have the resources in-house to be able to support their accounting conclusions. So the independence requirements are definitely, more enforced when you're a public company, and therefore management really needs to be comfortable with those accounting decisions that are reflected in their financial statements and ultimately the accounting policies that they apply going forward. Kind of what Socrates was talking about before is the structuring of the IPO. So you may put a new IPO entity in place, which means that historically you've got these individual vessel-owning subsidiaries that don't have an initial corporate structure. So in the U.S. world, we call that a carve-out basis, or we call them combined financial statements. It's just a little bit different than the word consolidated. Usually everybody's used to seeing consolidated. But, oops, sorry. We'll go back. So usually your financial statements are going to be prepared on a combined basis, and the equity is presented a little bit different. The equity just really is a presentation of the parent's net investment, and those financial statements need to be prepared, audited under PCAOB standards. As soon as you become a new IPO entity, and either the vessels or the vessel-owning subsidiaries are dropped into the new IPO entity, then your financial statements will naturally convert into a set of consolidated financial statements. Over and over again, we discuss, do you go IFRS versus U.S. GAAP? For foreign private issuers, you can choose either. Both are acceptable. Typically in the U.S., this is a decision that you make with your bankers. It's a commercial decision. It's not necessarily one that we have a preference over. Just to kind of give you an idea, there's currently 4 companies out of 45-plus shipping companies in the U.S. that apply IFRS. So U.S. GAAP is still the dominant GAAP that is applied. And there's kind of, we believe, 2 reasons why U.S. GAAP is preferable in the U.S. One has to do with vessel impairment testing. So I'm not going to get into too much explanation of the actual impairment models. But effectively, under U.S. GAAP, there's a 2-step model, and under IFRS, there's a 1-step model. And what this leads to is that typically you're taking impairments on vessels earlier under IFRS than you would under U.S. GAAP. And that's because U.S. GAAP allows you to follow an undiscounted cash flow model, which typically on a long-lived asset of 15, 20 years, you're never going to trip. It's always going to be higher than the carrying value. So U.S. GAAP is much more favorable in the impairment model. And the second item, sorry, a little bit of a cold. The second item relates to debt covenant testing. So typically at the end of each year, you're going to test your debt covenants. And we've known over the past, the historical 3 years, that sometimes you have a debt covenant violation. And this debt covenant violation can impact how you classify your debt as either long-term or short-term. And so under U.S. GAAP, if you go to your bank after the year end, so say you go in January, February, and they say, okay, you're going to pay for a waiver, so you're going to have a waiver, the U.S. GAAP allows you to go apply that to the last year end. So you after and therefore you would be able to keep your debt classified as long term. Under IFRS, you have to have that waiver in place prior to the end of the year. So that's another reason why some companies tend to favor U.S. GAAP. Overall, the conversion process can be very time consuming and complex, and so therefore the earlier you plan, the better. We are getting the red light, so. Just, I think, kind of the related party transactions is one of the key items that impact the shipping companies. And what we'd like to do early on is just try to get as many of the related party transactions on the table. The reason why is because every related party transaction that you have is going to become public, and you're going to have to disclose that in your financial statements and ultimately in your SEC document. And then that information becomes scrutinized by the regulator. So if you have any type of legal documents, related party management contracts for commercial and technical management, leases, many times, you know, companies lease buildings for their operations, any type of related party loans, all of these need to be thought about before you even file your first document to determine, one, if you want to change the nature of that related party agreement, and then ultimately, is that related party agreement at market? Because if it's not at market, then there might be additional considerations that need to be done. Definitely getting the red light. So we'll just talk a little bit about SOX, which is, in addition to IFRS versus U.S. GAAP, the second popular question is, when do I have to apply SOX? It's like the most dreaded question that everybody wants to, know the answer to. As a public company, you're going to be subject to SOX, you know, right from the get-go. But ultimately, when you actually have to report on that, typically is after your second year, is when management has to actually certify that they have controls that are in place and operating. The CEO and CFO actually have to sign a certification for that to happen. And now with the Jobs Act and as an emerging growth company, which is for the most part what companies are electing to do, that you don't have to have that audited until after 5 years. So there has been some relief in the U.S. related to the audit requirement, but management still does need to certify that they have internal controls in place, that they're operating, that they're able to be validated, and ultimately, you know, you'll file that with the SEC. So this kind of goes back to the point made earlier, which is you're going to need to probably ensure that you've got an internal audit function before you even become a public company. Okay. So with that, you want to...
So just very quickly, concluding remarks. Point is that IPOs getting ready to become a public entity requires a lot of preparation. It's worth starting early, even if you're not planning on doing so for another 2 or 3 years, start early. If you're planning on doing it fairly quickly, you're already late, so start now. And basically consult with your advisors, appoint the right advisors that know what they're talking about, that you have the right chemistry with, that they can work together seamlessly, as I mentioned before, because it's very much a team effort. An IPO readiness assessment is something that you may need to consider to do early, just so that you identify exactly what points you need to focus on and have pretty much a roadmap to the final, to a successful IPO. So thank you very much. Sorry we're a bit late with time. Thank you.